Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the last five, the most recent ones, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the most recent five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. Now this show, we're going to talk about a positive attitude and whether or not it really does make a difference to the outcome of the, well, we won't call it a dispute, to the outcome of the discussion so that we can reach consensus, we can reach compromise. And I think perhaps the original question, the first question that we should decide is, what is positive attitude? You know, we talk about it a lot, but it's like, well, what is it really? And, of course, on these shows, you know that we try to find a real-life example, a real practical solution to things, and not just theory. Theory's nice, but practical is better. Oh, look, I have lots of participation. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for coming back, and thank you for the new people. I already mentioned that the other shows are archived on the website and on the website of the radio station. So let's answer the question, what is a positive attitude? You know, Justin has a very good definition. He says that positive attitude is belief in success. Belief in success. What a good way of putting it. And a real succinct. And I'm getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for all of your participation. Belief in success, yes. You know what? Quite a few people are using the word self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's true that if you come in with a real sincere, a firmly held belief, you can't fake these things. If you come in with the attitude that, yes, we are going to succeed. We are going to reach consensus and we are going to solve whatever difficulty it is that we're trying to solve. We are going to do it, yes, and we're going to do it in a timely fashion and in a sensible manner. Well, that's a positive attitude, isn't it? And yes, people are saying that is self-fulfilling prophecy also. And we have talked about it before in these shows, that a self-fulfilling prophecy is really the concept that whatever you come in believing will probably occur because you will act in a way that causes it to be. For example, if you have, like Justin does, belief in success, and a lot of people are agreeing and saying that they do, thank you very much for all of your participation. If you have that belief, then there is an excellent chance that you will indeed succeed, that you will reach consensus, and that you will reach a solution and go forward. If you and you know, it's not just me saying it. People are bringing up all kinds of statistics and like that. Yes, there's lots of, I guess there's scientific studies that show that this is true, that it makes a difference whether or not you come in with the attitude that you're going to do it, you're going to succeed, or you come in with a negative attitude. Oh, my goodness, this will never work because it's never worked before in the past, or these people will never get along. No, that can't be. There's always a way to try to reach consensus and make a compromise. always there's very few times, you know, people are going, always is a big word. Yes, I know I say that too, don't I? People go, you always say always is a big word. Yes, when I say that, I of course mean that hardly anything is an always. But boy, I've never seen a group that couldn't reach some consensus and work towards a solution. They might have had to modify the complexity of the goal, the elements of it. But we reach it. We manage to, if you have a workshop, a seminar, a community gathering, whatever it is you're doing, if you come in with the belief in success and others come in with a sincere attitude also, yep, we make it. We go forward. And people are saying, yes, this is true. If you all come in and you all believe that you can and you all work towards it, there will be no holding you back. You will make it. So belief in success. Thank you, Justin, and others who said that. Now let's look at another definition of what is positive attitude. You know, Marcia and others are saying that it's a clearly defined goal to work toward. Good point. Because if you've just, yes, and I've gotten a lot of agreement, clearly defined goal to work toward. Because if you don't have a clearly defined goal, it's hard to know when you've reached it, right? Yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement. You know, some people are saying, thank you for all of your participation. I've gotten a little bit of dissension on that. Some people are saying that they like to keep the goal a little bit less specific because then you get bogged down in the semantics of it, in the requirements of the very specific goal, and they like a more generalized goal. You know what? I'm going to say what all of you accuse me of. I'm going to say it depends, right? Yes, people are going, you know, say it depends. Yes, I am, because it does. It depends on the group. It depends how far away they are from each other in reaching a consensus and reaching a common goal. And it depends on how complex the issues are. Some issues are fairly well defined just by their nature. And, you know, you want a certain thing. You want to change something that is specific. And some goals need some group discussion before you can exactly set them. But, yes, Marcia and others, pardon me, you're absolutely correct that a clearly defined goal to work towards is a real good idea. And, you know, a lot of people are saying this. Thank you for this. This is a very good point, and I thank you for not letting me forget to say it. Sometimes, you know, you got more than one goal, right? You can have a set of goals that kind of coalesce, that kind of work together, and therefore it's not necessarily one goal. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, people are going, especially if you've got something complex, and, you know, people are saying things like subcommittee and like that. Yes, sometimes you've got different areas that people are working on, and each area has a goal to achieve, like a research goal or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a really good point, too. Thank you for all of your participation. Karen is making a very good point. And, you know, it's often overlooked, but... And she says that one of the main things you have to do to have a positive attitude is you need to make an effort not to be rude to anyone. An effort not to be rude, to be polite, to treat everyone civilly, or else you won't have a positive atmosphere in the group, right? That's a really good point that we often overlook saying, but you got to think about it. You have to, she says, make an effort not to be rude to anyone. Very good point, because that will ruin your convivial atmosphere, right? You don't want to be rude to someone, and then they're rude back, and it's just not a good thing. And you don't want to get that started, because if someone else does it, you want to have the ability to say, no, don't do that. It's in the rules that you can't be rude to someone. You can't deny them their turn or say something really nasty. That'd be rude to anybody. Yeah, and Gerald and others are saying that in relationship to this concept of not being rude to anyone, you need to enforce civility rules for all participants. Civility rules. Now, I confess that, and people are saying, well, how do you know the rules? And then other people are saying that I have them written down. Yes, I confess that before we have an actual physical get-together, or even a one where some people are not in the room, which is not my preference, as you all know, but sometimes that happens. I mean, schedules and geography come into play with this. But before we get together and talk, I actually have a set of rules about behavior, about how everybody gets a turn, you know, kind of the grammar school rules. Everybody gets a turn, no spitting, no hitting, no biting. But you know what I mean, a civility set of rules. And quite frankly, I don't send out a template set for every group. I think about the group first and what type of group they are, how far apart they are, and what the issues are. Because some groups don't need the whole nine yards, and it's kind of insulting and implies that you think that they are vulgar and incapable of acting as civil adults. And some people are vulgar and incapable of acting as civil adults, so you have to actually set out real serious rules that you might even, and I've done this in my day, yes, people are saying that they see the ones that are uncivil and rude and that they actually not only email the rules around, but they post them in the room or hand them out in an actual hard copy. So you can point and say, you know, under rule number 3 of this get-together of my mediation, of my alternative dispute resolution, of my workshop, my seminar, whatever it is you're doing, you must give other people a turn. You can't just take the floor and not relinquish it. For example, you see, written rules are good for that. And yes, I have in my day passed them out. Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on the group, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And Zia and others are saying that not only do you need not to be rude, but you need to stay, and thank you for all your participation. Yes, everybody's going, yeah, well, you don't want to be rude, but it's hard to get people to follow that rule. Yes, well, that's why we have rules. Yeah, and last time we talked about what to do if someone comes with a bad attitude and refuses to modify it. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned that all of the shows are archived, the last 5 on the website, so kind of peek back at that one. But yeah, we had kind of a lot of show dealing with what happens when somebody comes because they want to fight and they like the status quo and they don't want change. Yeah. So, you know. But Z and others are making a good point that you need to state the questions in a positive manner to elicit a positive response. Good point. Thank you, Zia. And a lot of people agreeing. A lot of people have said that basic thing also. To state the questions when you're having the negotiation, the discussion up and back, you need to state the questions in a positive manner to elicit a positive response. Yeah, and you know, for example, stating it in a when manner. When we accomplish this, what's our next step? Instead of if we accomplish this, what's our next step? You see, the when assumes that we're going to make it, that we're going to accomplish this, we're going to do it. The when, see, it's a we're going to question, as opposed to, oh, I don't know about this, the if question, if we make it. No, when we make it, you see. And, you know, a lot of people are saying this, Celeste and others, and it's a very good point, that oftentimes we mull over the mistakes that we make or the little failures along the way. You know, having a wee bit of failure in any kind of negotiation just means that you're going to try something else. It doesn't mean that you're going to quit, right? Because we have a positive attitude and we are positive that we're going to accomplish our goal. The question is just, well, I suppose people are saying the question is how fast. Yeah, sometimes that's true. And in what way? How we work it around. And Celeste says that you need to celebrate every small step forward. Yes, emphasize the good stuff. Emphasize, look, we have gone forward on this. We have had success. We've reached this, we've gotten this far. Let's not turn back. Let's keep going. You know, and and people are saying, this is an interesting point too, that you rate success in reports and any kind of a written document and incorporate failures into new ideas for solution. Stephen made that point. It's an interesting point that if you need to write it up, if somebody's making a report, and even if you're making like a summary of what happened, a lot of times there is a person who's taking notes, and they're sending out a report or an agenda or just the notes on the event. You know, if you incorporate your successes into the report and you take your failures, or what you perceive as your failures, and you make them into new ideas for solution, then you haven't had any failure. Now, have you? You've had success, and you're pushing forward. Yes. Yeah, Lydia and others are pointing out the old expression, never admit failure. This is a global show, and I'm always leery of American expressions, but it's kind of an old expression. Don't admit failure. Never admit failure. Just regard it as an opportunity to try again. Yeah, see? Everybody, you know, Thomas Edison, I've forgotten. Somebody once told me that he had like 900 tries before he had the light bulb. Yeah, I'm getting all sorts of numbers here. I'm not going to pick a number. But you know what I mean. It doesn't always happen on the first go. It doesn't make it a failure. It means that we're going to have to get together again. And we're going to have to work this out because we can. You know, Abby says that nothing is a failure. Everything is a good try until you find the one that actually works. Yes, everything is a good try until you find the one that actually works. Exactly. You know, it's like dancing or something. There's steps forward and little steps backward, but basically we move forward. It's just, you know, up and back. So, now that we've decided what a positive attitude is, how are we going to incorporate that positive attitude into the consensus process? Because remember, we talk not so much theory on this show as we do practical matters. So now we know how to get a positive attitude. How are we going to incorporate it into the negotiation process? How are we going to incorporate it so that we can reach consensus, reach our goal, and go forward with it, you see? We're always pushing forward. Charles and others are making an interesting point that I guess, you know, I always say I learned something from this show, and I hope you do too. I didn't really think of it in that manner, but he says that the incorporation of the positive attitude and the going forward will naturally occur when you move the process forward if you refuse to stagnate, you refuse to not push on. And that kind of naturally occurs, this incorporation of the positive attitude. You know, and Elizabeth and others are saying that enthusiasm, which is positive attitude, right? Enthusiasm is another word for it. Enthusiasm is contagious. You know, I've seen that, haven't you? that if you're a really enthusiastic host, people have a better time. And they open up more, and you can lead the conversation. And, you know, you might know somebody in the group that they've had some sort of a success that's outside the group. And you might comment about that. And, you know, it all leads to a positive attitude. And, you know what, Jeffrey and others are making a good point, that just like positive enthusiasm is contagious, negative attitudes are contagious too. Mm-hmm. And you need to control them before they kind of grab hold of your group. You see, you need to always argue towards the positive outcome, because sometimes it's possible that someone with a negative attitude, yeah, people are saying the word hijack, yeah, they kind of take over the group, right? And you need to counter that before it gets, well, yeah, people are saying before it becomes contagious. Yes, you want the positive attitude to become contagious. You know what, Russ and others are mentioning that it's also a matter of phrasing the questions. And he says, let's work this out, promotes discussion and consensus. Let's work this out. Yeah, that's a real good segue into something more general, isn't it? Oh, here's an interesting point. Andrea says that instead of saying, let's work this out, which is kind of enthusiasm neutral, right? She says, we can work this out, which is very positive. You see the difference? We can work this out. Let's work this out is really good, but we can work this out is a more positive way of putting it. We can. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good point. It goes towards the use of language when we are doing these mediations and get-togethers. It's all an important consideration. Mm-hmm. You know, Harold and several other people, thank you for all of your participation. They're making a point that when you're all together, that you need to incorporate body language and tone of voice into the positive attitude. Very good point. You know, the body language of leaning forward towards someone, for example, and using a tone of voice that is not, people using the word sarcastic, that's not exactly what I had in mind, that's appropriate to the enthusiasm. It's not condescending. It's not sarcastic. It's not people use the term bullying. It's not kind of threatening. Just an enthusiastic tone of voice and body language. Lean forward towards people and other ways of making them feel welcome and feel a part of the process. You know, Linda is making up a good point that you need to be sincere or others will not follow you. Yeah, you can't fake sincerity. Now, I suppose you could add to your enthusiasm just to show how enthusiastic you are, but this is all a good point, that you need to be sincere. And, you know, Sandy says, this is a very good point, thank you for all your participation, you should look for things to praise instead of things to criticize. Look for things to praise instead of things to criticize. And it's very important that you not be critical of something that doesn't affect the outcome or the group. You shouldn't be critical about someone personally in some way, for example. And sometimes whatever has happened just needs to be overlooked because it doesn't have any bearing. You know, we're not perfect either, and that's the truth. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about this now we've talked about sincerity now. So I think maybe we have the question of how do we develop and communicate the positive beliefs and attitudes? People asking how you do it. How do you do it on a practical manner? very good point, very good question. And I think that goes to Sandy's concept of look for things to praise instead of things to criticize, right? Because then you will incorporate and communicate and develop this positive belief in the group so that you're all sure that you're going to make it. Because one person being sure isn't going to tie it. You have to get everybody, or pretty much everybody. And Kurt is making an interesting point. He says that you look for things to laugh about together. Look for things to laugh about together. Well, that goes to finding positive things to talk about. Yeah, I'm getting some divided thoughts about that. I'm afraid that because I have so much experience, I tend not to be to do something that's funny, because humor is kind of personal. Now, if you know the group, you know the people, you know that it's okay, and they'll understand, for example, that it's humorous, then go for it. But I'm going to say it again. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the group. If you're not sure, oh boy, maybe it's just because I'm not very funny. But if you're not sure, err on the side of caution about using humor, although it's a real good idea. And in the right group, it's really boffo. But the key is that you have to be careful not to do it at the expense of someone else. I know this is a global show, and that's probably an American little saying, but the concept is that you shouldn't laugh about something or someone that will in some way make them hypercritical, you know, be excited that they've been criticized. And that always makes everyone uncomfortable. So it can't be at the expense of someone else's humor. Right, right. And, you know, Ray is getting back to the celebration concept as an idea of how to develop and communicate the positive beliefs and attitudes. He says that you can have intermediate celebrations when you activate a step towards the final goal, when you achieve a step towards the final goal. Have intermediate celebrations every time you push forward a little bit. You know, it's depending, of course, on the group and the ability to get together too much. It's a really nice idea. I'm kind of fond of celebrating that we're going forward so that everybody notices. Because a lot of times people notice the negative, but they don't take much note of the positive. It's just human nature. Nothing's wrong. They don't take much note. And it's important to make really celebrations and celebrate the every time you meet a milestone. Well, people use the word milestone. I don't know if it's a big milestone, but every time you make a success, be sure and celebrate it. And, you know, Brody is making an interesting point, too. He says that it's a conscious choice to have a positive attitude. A conscious choice. And Pat is mentioning that this conscious choice, you make the decision to have a positive attitude. And so it's a conscious choice. And Pat's making the point that a conscious choice like that carries over into all aspects of your life. Yeah, if you have a positive attitude coming into a negotiation or a seminar, workshop, whatever it is you're doing, that will carry over, and it's quite cool. And people will respond to it because you're full of enthusiasm. Cool. And, you know, this is an interesting point, too, that Don is making, that when you say that it's a conscious choice, that what you look for is what you will see, because it's a question of interpreting relations and interpretation depending on viewpoint. It's a question of interpretation depending on the viewpoint. Well, you know, we have discussed that we all come with, well, some outside opinions to the table. And therefore, yeah. And you need to look and kind of accentuate the positive. You know, Carol's making an interesting point. She says at the end of each session, discuss the positive strides moving forward. And this will give you solution thinking, which she puts in quotes, for issues for the next meeting. It gets you into problem-solving mode, doesn't it? At the end of each session, discuss what happened that was positive. And, you know, people are saying you should discuss the whole thing, what happened that didn't work too, so that we can all think on it. And we can all think of how we're going to do it different next time. Mm-hmm. Real good point that you need to, at the end of the session, kind of have a brainstorm about the next session, right? Yeah, good idea. And, Jean's making one of my favorite points, that the key is to listen and to think instead of freezing out solutions that originally don't seem quite like they'll work, that you have to listen and think. And it's a good way to develop kind of a groupthink theory if you look at the positive points as well as the negative ones. Mm-hmm. And you think about a solution, and you think about it together so that you go, well, let's see what everybody thinks about this, and then go forward, you see. And, Alan's saying that you need to be certain to stress the positive advances even if they seem inconsequential. No positive step forward, even if it's a teeny-weeny baby step, is inconsequential. They all need to be celebrated. And, Sherry's making a point that is, of course, rather close to the Recipe for Peace Now concept. She says that developing relationships among the participants will also create a positive attitude towards the process. I'm reading this kind of like I've got a lot of commas in it, isn't it? I'll start over. Hello. Sherry says that developing relationships among the participants will also create a positive attitude towards the process because everyone will enjoy coming. Good point. We're kind of holding the party, aren't we, in its way? Because we've created a convivial atmosphere for discussion and for consensus and for reaching a compromise. What an idea. And if you, as Sherry says, developing relationships among the participants will also create a positive attitude towards the process because everyone will enjoy coming. Yes. And, you know, and those of you who have been here before, and there's lots of you, thank you for all of your participation, know that one of the things that we stress is that there are no real rules that you need to follow, whatever works, but that food is a real good thing for a timeout. And in every negotiation, every gathering of humans, there comes a time when somebody needs to compromise, right? Consensus is really compromise. And if you need to call a time out and you let them out of the room, so to speak, they will talk to someone worse than they are, and their knee-jerk reaction of, no, I'm not going to compromise, will solidify. But if you can keep them in the room because we're having a lovely time out, a lovely break so that we can have some of this delicious food, if you do it that way, then they'll stay in the room and they'll still think. And they'll think, well, my first reaction was no, but maybe I could move a teeny-weeny bit if the other party would move a teeny-weeny bit. You see? And then you go from there because you've already had a positive, a convivial, you've gotten together, you have a relationship, you know something about each other that doesn't really have to do with the issues. And if you're chewing on something, it kind of gives you a moment to think. What an idea. So, We have now reached the recipe portion of the show, right? Right, yes, people are asking that. And I know that I say this every time, but it's very, very important, so I'm going to say it again. And for those of you who have heard it, yes, this is what I always say, and thank you for coming back, and thank you to the new people for all your participation. Yes, it is very important if you're going to have food, which we are, to email, communicate up and back concerning any food allergies, any religious prohibitions, and any dietary restrictions. Because you don't want people to have a bad time. You don't want them to get sick or offended or in any way not be able to have a convivial good time, you see? And so you need to label everything. You need to ask in advance if anyone cannot eat something, and you need to label everything that comes in. Not just what it is, but what's in it, so that people who have a food allergy, a religious or a dietary prohibition concerning food, will be able to see if that fits the bill, if that's it, if that they can eat. And we all know from prior shows that I also think that as the host, it's rather your responsibility to have extra food and to maybe even provide a safe dish. Now, what's a safe dish? A safe dish, in my opinion, is one that does not have a whole bunch of unusual ingredients. Okay, unusual to your area. You guys know that I'm in the United States, and so I use chicken and stuff a lot, and I get a lot of emails about using other kinds of protein like goat. Yeah, whatever you got. Just remember to cook it thoroughly. And a safe recipe does not have too many ingredients. The ingredients are something that really most people in the room should know what they are and whether or not they can eat them. And they must be clearly written out, clearly defined, clearly labeled, so that we don't have, we don't have a non-convivial time. Yes. So, my safe recipe for this show is going to be orange chicken salad. It's very delicious, and it's nice when the weather gets warmer. On this side of the globe, we are heading into summer, so it's kind of like, we do more salads and things. We're going to have 1.5 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breasts that we're going to cut into strips. A big head of lettuce. I actually like iceberg the best. If you don't like that, use whatever it is that you like as a salad green. And if you're going to use the head of lettuce, you have to cut it, kind of chop it. I cut it into strips, and then I cut it into big pieces straight down. I guess that's chopping it, but not into teeny-weeny pieces. We're going to have about a good pound anyway, about 6 oranges that are sectioned, and if they are big oranges, the sections need to be cut in half because we're going to put them in with the chicken, and we don't want the oranges to be bigger than the chicken. I actually, and I know this is something that is very available here in the summer, probably not in other places, I like to use those little, are they called tangerines? Tangerines. The little kind of hybrids, I suppose, that have no seeds and are actually like mandarin oranges. They're little and I guess they are mandarin oranges, little oranges that are easy to peel and have little sections with no seeds and are very sweet. They look wonderful. They taste even better. And 1/2 cup of chopped nuts if you're positive that no one's allergic to them. Very important. I never use peanuts for that reason. I like walnuts in this because it gives it some taste and some texture. And we're going to have a couple of tablespoons of oil. Now, that's the solid pieces. We're going to also have a dressing for this salad, right? Because we need something moist to incorporate with the chicken and all the lettuce, all the greens. So we're going to take 3/4 cup of honey, 2/3 cup of red wine vinegar. Yes, you have to tell people about that just in case. I like soy sauce in it because I think it counteracts the honey because soy sauce is really salty and honey is really sweet. So I like a tablespoon of soy sauce and about a teaspoon or so of ground ginger. Nice if you can grind it yourself. Pardon me, grind it off a fresh piece. Yes. So we've got our chicken strips, our raw chicken strips, and we've got our oil. We're going to put the oil in a pan. We're going to heat it up, and we're going to cook our chicken strips through. It what takes about, I don't know, less than 10 minutes. Remember to flip them on all sides so they're nicely browned. Not only does that look nicer, but you're sure to have cooked it through. Then we've got our chicken all cooked. And while it's cooking, while it's in the pan, let's combine all the dressing ingredients. We're going to just mix everything together, the honey, the red wine vinegar, the soy sauce, and the grated ginger. Mm-hmm. The chicken is now cooked. We take it out and we let it cool because this is a salad, and we don't want hot salad. Can it be warm? Sure. Can we refrigerate it? Sure. Not forever, of course. I suppose it'll go overnight, but I don't like to push chicken very far. So we've got it cooked. We've got the dressing all mixed together. And we're going to pour about half a cup of the dressing back into the skillet with the chicken. And we're going to cook them for about a couple of minutes just to incorporate. Now, why did we let the chicken cool a little bit first? Because it was too hot. But it needs to cool a little. We didn't refrigerate it or anything. And we're going to marinate it. Well, it's not exactly a marinade. People are going to marinate. Marinade, I always picture, is kind of overnight. This is just to make sure the chicken is coated and not just the lettuce. I like to do this. You can eliminate that step if you don't like it. So we are going to cook it, and the liquid will evaporate on that. And now we're going to combine the lettuce and the oranges and the walnuts in a big salad bowl, and we're going to pour on the remaining dressing, and we're going to toss it all around so it's incorporated, and we're going to top it with the chicken strips and the oranges. You don't have to top it. You can mix it through if you want. Yes, yes. There you have it, orange chicken salad. You know, a lot of people are asking me about using canned mandarin orange sections, or the kind that come in a jar, kind of processed. And you all know that I have nothing against using processed and making it quicker and easier on yourself. In fact, a lot of you tell me I use too much in the sense that if I've got tomatoes or something, I say use a can of diced tomatoes because it's all prepped and everything like that. I think that frozen vegetables are a really good thing and a real convenience. And I know that in the United States they are very readily available, in other parts of the world not so much. But I don't know why. I just think those little canned mandarin oranges taste funny. So that's up to you. I like to use the fresh ones because I just don't think they taste like oranges, and they are a lot softer. So if you're going to use such a thing, I would say put them on the top almost like a garnish or incorporate them very carefully because they are kind of squishy, and be sure and drain them. But if it's possible, I have nothing against it. Yeah, well, you know, these recipes are all suggestions and are not written in stone. You modify them however you would like. You know, people are saying they like to add raisins to it. Go, this is wonderful. And it's the mandarin canned ones. If you like it, go for it. I don't have an objection. They sure are pretty. I just don't usually use them, and I like the little. In all truth and honesty, those little mandarin, fresh mandarin oranges are easily available here, and I know that's not true every place, so yes. And people are asking about different kinds of fruit. Do as you please. Grapes is very nice in this. If it's a season when you have grapes and you can find seedless grapes and cut them in half and put it in. Very nice. Okay, so that's our safe recipe. It is safe because we have asked beforehand if anyone's allergic to any of that. I have a friend who's allergic to vinegar, so you have to ask. And it is, you've asked already, it is ingredients that everyone can eat. and you can pretty much see what's in it, and we're going to carefully label it. Yes, yes. Now, our adventure recipe this show is going to be a seafood and rice. It's kind of like a pilaf. I call it a seafood stew with rice because that's really what it is. But it's very delicious. It is our adventure recipe because fish and shellfish are oftentimes a serious allergen. And there are some religions that don't eat shellfish. So that's a religious prohibition. But if everybody's all right with this and you've checked, this is kind of a nice, simple seafood pilaf. We're going to have a good tablespoon of oil, of olive oil. And we're going to take about a cup and a half of rice. No, we're not going to cook it first, surprisingly enough. We're going to cook it with the fish. Two red peppers that we're going to seed, core, and dice. Dice them all up. Two nice red peppers. If you like, and I like the color combo better, I use one red and one green just because I think it's pretty. And I mix them together and it looks pretty. A nice onion that we're going to finely chop also. Two zucchinis if they are in season and you have access to them. If not, frozen's okay. It's just that you need to thaw it first if you're going to use frozen. About half a pound of mushrooms because they look nice and they're yummy, which I slice if they haven't been sliced already. Makes them go further. And everybody likes it that way. About about a cup and three quarters of chicken stock. Yes, people are asking about fish stock. You certainly can. I don't usually use fish stock just because I know this is a silly thing to say, but it seems like it makes it too fishy. I like chicken stock better. And chicken stock's easier to get around here. Wherever you are, it might not be. Two-thirds of a cup of orange juice. Now we're going to get to the fish part. We're going to have pound and a half of a nice firm white fish, a nice firm white fish fillet that we're going to cut into, for lack of a nicer word, chunks. About 16 muscles that we're going to wash and pull off what they call the beard get all the graininess out of them if you can't get them pre-washed like you can around here. And we're going to salt and pepper it, of course. So now we've got our ingredients. You know, people add shrimp to this. People asking about shrimp. Yes, shrimp would be lovely. They get added in at fairly towards the end, right? Because you can't overcook shrimp. It makes them tough. So, yes, shrimp, clams, mussels, any kind of a fish. I like to use a fish that's fairly firm. So I usually say a white fish just because it has to cook. And you don't want it to just come apart and just be mushy. So, yes, whatever you like. We're going to hit the oil, and we're going to add the rice, and we're going to cook it for about a minute, just because it gets it all nice and warm and coated. Then we're going to add the red peppers, the onion, the zucchini, and the mushrooms, and we're going to stir it until the onion gets nice and translucent and everything smells really nice. And then we're going to stir in the, right in the same big pan, we're going to stir in our stock and our orange juice. And we're going to bring the whole thing to a boil. We're going to get it all boiled up and it's all delicious. And now after we've gotten it to a boil, we're going to lower the heat a little because we don't want it to come apart. And we're going to add the fish ingredients. The mussels, the clams, the pieces of fish, not shrimp, because they get added at the last minute. They're a wee bit delicate. So we're going to put the stock in the orange juice, bring it to a boil, add the other ingredients, all the good stuff. And we're going to lower the heat, and we're going to cover it and simmer it for about 15 minutes. You will know when it is done because we added the rice, right? We threw it in with all the other stuff, with the fish and the onions and the peppers and the mushrooms and like that. And when the rice is done, the thing is done. It takes about 15 minutes until the liquid absorbs in the rice. By then, everything is soft, everything is delicious, and it's just yummy. You need to add a little, you need to maybe peek at it and add a little more liquid. Generally speaking, I don't think you do need to add more liquid, but if you must, make it something that's not cold from the refrigerator. And I actually like to stir in the mussels and clams along with the shrimp at the last minute-ish, because they don't need as much cooking. You cook them for about 8 minutes. And we all know that if you've got mussels and clams and things with shells, that the shells are supposed to open when they cook, right? And that if you have something that's really sealed shut, that's really not opened, you throw that out because it's not a good piece of shellfish, right? You throw out any mussels that remain closed, and there you've got it. You don't even have to serve the rice on the side because you've boiled it in with this. It looks fantastic. Yeah. And it smells delicious. And you can finish it off while everybody's talking, which will make the room smell really good. But it's got a lot of ingredients that a lot of people can't eat. And that's why it's the adventure recipe. It has fish and shellfish and mushrooms. And some people are allergic to oranges, orange juice. It's got a whole bunch of stuff that someone might have a prohibition for. So you got to check first. You got to ask. Yes, just ask people. And that's why we label. That's why we put the labels on everything so that no one has a bad time. You know, we're not really throwing a party exactly, but we are getting together for a purpose. And that purpose is not to make somebody sick or kind of panicky because they ingested something that's against the principles. So, that's it. Thank you very much for coming. Our time together is up. It went very fast. Thank you very much for coming. I hope that you learned something. I always do. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to listen to prior shows, or if you would like to re-listen to this one, the last five, well, including this one, will be on in a fairly short period of time. The last five are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. The rest of them, including the last five, are archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much for listening. And do come again. Thank you. Bye-bye.